Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. Goran Krop loved mountains. Some might say he was even built like one. The man topped out at 6'3" and 240 pounds. He was born in Sweden in 1966, and his father introduced him to climbing at a very young age. When Goran was 6, he and his father climbed the highest mountain in Norway together, cementing Goran's obsession then and there. Mountains change over time, but never go away. They're solid, permanent. If only Mr. and Mrs. Krop's marriage had been so strong. Several years after Goran's life-changing adventure, his parents divorced. Goran didn't take it well, but after a few years of endless partying and excessive drinking, he knew something had to change. He couldn't keep going on this way, so Goran made a complete 180-degree turn and joined the Swedish paratroopers. It was there he built up his strength and stamina, marching for miles with 150 pounds of gear strapped to his back, and gained the admiration of his fellow soldiers. But he never forgot his love of climbing. The feel of rocks under his fingers, and the thrill of reaching the top of the place man was not meant to see. Goran lived a simple life outside of being a paratrooper. He saved his meager military earnings by living in a tent, and climbed mountains in his free time. By the late 1980s, he'd climbed 5 peaks, each of them nearly 4 miles tall, and all by himself. After that, it was all about climbing higher and farther. He was the first Swede to climb to the top of K2 in the Himalayas, and by the mid-1990s, he reached the summit of 5 of the 14 tallest mountains in the world, most of them by himself. There was a reason he was known as the Crazy Swede. But one peak stood out above all the rest, literally. Survivors have written books about it, and countless men and women have died trying to reach the top. That's right, Mount Everest. He still had yet to summit the granddaddy of them all. He was Goran Krop, the Crazy Swede, and climbing to the top of Mount Everest like everyone else was out of the question. He couldn't just fly from his home in Stockholm all the way to Nepal. No, he wanted to make an entrance, one that would take him 6 months to make. He loaded up a specially designed bicycle with 250 pounds of food and gear and left his home on October 16th of 1995. He rode 6,000 miles on that bicycle, all the way to Mount Everest Base Camp, arriving in April of 1996. Once there, he convinced the other ongoing expeditions at the time to let him summit first, alone. No Sherpa, no partner, just Goran and his gear. This was it. Everything he'd been training for, all of those other mountains he'd conquered, had been nothing more than appetizers, and this was the main course. He began his ascent on May 3rd, trudging all day through snow as deep as his thighs, until he found himself 300 feet from the summit. Unfortunately, the day had gotten away from him, and darkness was closing in. Goran wasn't worried about reaching the top, but of being stranded alone on the mountain until morning. Up to his waist in snow and ice, he would surely die of exposure. Instead, he climbed back down and bided his time in base camp. Then the unthinkable happened. A blizzard had struck another group of climbers descending Everest a few days later. They'd left too late in the day and had been caught in the storm after dark. Goran helped carry medical supplies up the mountain over the next several weeks. When the weather finally cleared up 3 weeks later, he saw his chance. He was going to try again. On his second attempt, the Crazy Swede did it. He climbed to the top of Mount Everest all by himself, accomplishing something very few others had done before him. Then, with nothing left to prove, Goran descended the mountain. Waiting for him back at base camp was his only companion, the one who had come with him all the way from Stockholm, Sweden, his trusty bicycle. Goran Krop packed up his gear, mounted his mighty steed, and said goodbye to everyone at base camp before beginning his ride home. It seems that even after climbing the tallest and most dangerous mountain in the world, He just couldn't help going the extra mile. The mind is a miraculous thing. This bundle of nerves and gray matter floating in our heads is constantly coming up with new ideas and dreams, tiny explosions of creativity every second of every day. Feed it and watch it grow. Push it just a little bit, and you'll be amazed at what it's capable of. Helene Smith had opened her mind while growing up in Hungary in the late 1800s. From a very young age, she treated her brain like a sponge, absorbing as much as possible from books, teachers, and her surrounding environment. She was fluent in 5 languages and had passable skills in 3 others, English, Latin, and Greek. She was also a spiritual person. Literally, the whole family was. Helene's mother and brother were known to experience visions of the future, communicate with the dead, and even see into other worlds. Their talents hadn't skipped Helene, who started attending and hosting seances in her 30s. Her performances were what we've come to expect from mediums today. She had knowledge of events she shouldn't have known about, and could relay messages from dead relatives to their living ones via her voice or through taps on a table. Nowadays, we greet these techniques with healthy skepticism and even have clear explanations for many of them. But back then, it was a different story. Take cold reading, for example, a common observational method used by mediums to dupe people into revealing more about themselves than they realize. A medium can use that information, be it verbal or through body language, to pretend to know something about a person without explicitly being told. We're wise to it today, but back in 1891, Helene's intuition was a revelation. She was the star attraction at parties where her abilities were tested by new and increasingly doubtful audiences. Then, one night, a new skill manifested: automatism. Helene found the spirits would speak through her, sometimes literally, but often using her hands as their own. She could write in the persona of the spirit she had conjured without conscious thought. As far as she knew, time had passed and something had been transcribed, but she hadn't written a word of it herself. But automatism turned out to be a talent that would take her far. Some might say, too far. During one particular seance at the home of a psychology professor named Theodore Florney, Helene began to communicate with the other world. Not the world of the dead, as she had done many times before. This was a much different world, an outer world, otherwise unreachable by man. Helene entered a trance, a kind of deep sleep where she sighed and swayed in her chair to music that only she heard, until the music suddenly stopped. Then Helene softly recited the words coming to her from this distant land. Translated into English, the spirit said, "This is the house of the great man, Astaine, whom thou hast seen." Astaine, you see, lived on Mars, and Helene Smith of Earth had the incredible ability to go there, in her mind at least, and bring back the message to us. Florney wasn't so sure. After multiple sessions with her and a copious amount of research, he concluded the similarities of the supposed Martian language to Helene's native French meant she hadn't really accessed the far reaches of outer space using her mind. Her deep trances and automatism, however, those were not so easily explained. Hearing this today, you too might assume Helene was probably conning them all, that she knew exactly what she was doing and was very good at it. You might be right too, but Helene did one more thing that leaves even the most skeptical of skeptics scratching their heads. She described to Florney her journeys to the planet Mars, which Florney recorded in his notes. During one session, she told him, in the Martian language, that she saw carriages gliding by, with no horses or wheels, but emitting sparks. While gas-powered automobiles first appeared in the late 1800s, they would not be mass-produced until well after the turn of the century. Perhaps Helene's vision of vehicles on Mars was a lucky guess meant to wow unsuspecting crowds. Or maybe not. With robots traversing the surface of the red planet today, it's tempting to believe the impossible, that she really could see the future. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show, and you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.